In this fun limited romp through a haunted mansion, ghosts haunt people, dead people haunt children, and children haunt ghosts. The cycle of life. Join us as we discuss the haunting of Bly Manor and chat about Peter Quint, Lake Woman, agency, and neat hairstyles, and eventually get to the gays. How are you? Your dad is coming today?
Tomorrow.
Arrives
at 9:45 tomorrow night.
That's late.
Yeah, well, he scheduled the weird... Okay, this is something, like, my parents are retired, and you're going to use this in the episodes, so I'm going to tell it diplomatically in case they ever listen to it.
Okay.
And and I totally understand they're on, you know, like, a fixed income, and they're concerned about spending too much money, but, like... He's doing this weird thing where he flies to Denver and then he has like a 3-hour layover there and then flies to New York just so he can fly to LaGuardia because he's concerned about the price of taking a taxi from JFK to my apartment.
Taxi is going to be like $90.
It's not actually usually that expensive. It's usually about $40.
As someone who has taken a taxi from your place to South Brooklyn... Many a time it is sometimes in the evening a little bit expensive.
It depends. Well, if you do the like ride share and then if you, I don't know, I've done my place to JFK for $40. To your place for some reason it's much more expensive.
I think they
discount airports a little bit to encourage people to use their app more when you're for the rest of the trip. That's my conspiracy theory.
Oh, I like that. That's good marketing.
Yeah. Right? It makes sense. Like, if you take it and the airport ride is really cheap, you're like, okay, I can use this app again when I need to go to, you know, the show or the dinner or whatever. So that's my theory. It is a long flight. You know, it is a 5-hour flight and it's a 3-hour time difference. So it is like a whole day regardless. But like, I feel like with the 3-hour layover, he's just making things a little harder on himself.
just
to save some cab fare. Anyway.
Now that you've been mean about your dad and I interrupted you.
Jeez. Welcome to In Media Les, a podcast about queer relationships and media. I'm Chloe.
And I'm Val.
And today we will be discussing the 2020 Netflix series, The Haunting of Bly Manor, created by Michael Flanagan. It's the second in the anthology of The Haunting series. The first was The Haunting of Hill House, which I cannot watch.
Yeah, there is a scene in the beginning that you're not a fan of.
They're just so mean to those. There's these cats.
I will say they only show it for like less than a second and they never show it again.
I know, but it's just like I start watching it. Yeah. And then it happens and then I'm just like, I can't.
Which is fair. It was a drag until like episode 8. And then I was like, oh maybe it is pretty good.
That is a lot of investment for a payoff. I mean, I'm willing to do it. But anyway, so Bly Manor is starring Victoria Pedretti, Oliver Jackson Cohen, Amelia Eve, Tania Miller, Rahul Kohli, Tahira Sharif, and starring Emily Bayes-Smith, Benjamin Evan Ainsworth, Henry Thomas.
Give me some 1 second. My mom just turned on a fan.
Okay.
By accident. So I have to make a phone call. My mom was like, wait, so I can't watch TV? And I'm like, no, mom, you can watch TV. It's just the hood of the oven stove thing vibrates through the floor into the mic.
Yeah, that would make a lot of noise.
Yeah.
I do really enjoy how seamlessly you switch into this Russian accent. It's like really amazing how quickly. And then like, because you're just speaking perfectly unaccented English and then perfectly unaccented Russian, like, you know, in the same sentence.
You know, funny story.
Yeah.
I always thought that I had an accent in Russian, which I probably do a little bit, but I've recently been listening to more like Russian music and a couple of interviews of those artists.
Yeah.
And all of them have that cadence to their speaking. So I think I reframed what an accent in Russian would be like growing up here and just assumed I have it. When in reality, it's very, like, it's a very small accent. I just don't know how to speak Russian, so I forget a lot of words. That's why I stumble in it.
Okay.
But yeah, everyone speaking Russian feels like they have an accent to me.
Interesting.
Brains are wild. Let's get back to the haunting.
I wanted to start this because I wanted to start with a question for you, which is, have you been in many weddings?
Yes, I'm Jewish.
Yes. Have you been in the wedding parties?
No, I was usually very little, and no one recently got married.
If you went to a rehearsal dinner for a wedding, and...
Oh, we don't do those.
Okay.
That's always such a wild concept.
Let's say you go to a wedding, and there's the big dinner, and then afterwards people are, you know, there's the reception or after party or, you know, whatever. Mm-hmm. And, you know, it whittles down, and by the end you've got a smaller group. And then some woman who is some distant friend of the family tells some ghost story where a bunch of people die and her lover dies and all this other horrible stuff happens. Would that be a good thing to tell at a wedding, do you think? Would you like that to happen at your wedding?
I didn't like that happening when I was at your place. That one evening when you Christmas and Lee Eve. Were telling... Was that Christmas? It was Christmas Eve.
It was Christmas Eve because there's the song that mentions scary ghost stories. And we started telling ghost stories on Christmas Eve. Yes.
Although that was fine because ghost stories are fake. But like at a wedding, I would not.
Not mine though.
Uh-huh.
Definitely. Anyway. but yeah, like it to me, this is such a weird... Okay, so because it's like a frame narrative. So the conceit here is that a woman is telling this story at a wedding years later, and we don't know that it's about her, except like I figured from the start that like one of the characters was going to be her, and it was just figuring out who it was. And I think you're supposed to think that it's Danny, who's the au pair. You're supposed to think that, but it became pretty clear to me that like, it wasn't fairly quick. I was just like, it's got to be someone else. But there's the idea that she's changing some of the details slightly, or that like she's forgotten parts of it, and that there's this whole like how much of this is like her being a reliable narrator. But she's telling this story about this au pair who in 1987 goes to London from the United States to look after this family, these two kids. Their parents died in India, I believe, and the uncle who's supposed to take care of them is too busy, although we later learn that he's just a guilty alcoholic and he doesn't want to see them, but that's later. And it's this old country estate, Bly Manor, and you know, she goes there, she meets the children, they're weird, there's a housekeeper, Flora, who's very nice.
That's the child, yeah.
Oh, Flora's the child. There's Hannah, this housekeeper. Yeah. Hannah, the housekeeper.
Hannah's great.
Flora is the child. Miles is the child. And then the gardener, Jamie. And then Owen, the cook,
who is awesome.
Yes. I'm glad we both agree on that.
Yeah.
And the kids are weird. Like, they're normal, like, half the time. And the other half of the time, they're very, like, mean and adult like and you're like, what's going on? And then like there's all these moments where the au pair, who's named Danny, will see, you know, something, and then it's gone. Like, she keeps seeing these people, and she sees like muddy footsteps, and she finds all this weird stuff around. I feel like I'm describing this very flippantly, but I think it's actually a very compellingly told, very good story.
Yeah, it was very good because, like, okay, so I started watching Hill House when it came out because I read the book around the same time.
Yeah.
But I could not get past the first episode because the only reason I was watching is because everyone on Tumblr was freaking out that it was very queer.
Yes.
So I'm like, oh my god, they made Eleanor and Theo like a thing. Well, I start watching, turns out they're siblings. I was like, okay, whatever, right? And then the queer parts, the gay part, is like 30 seconds in the show.
Yeah.
And also, just something about the way they filmed the first, like, three quarters of it. I was just bored. And I wanted to like it. I mean, I've watched the entire thing because I wanted to watch it and like it. You know what I mean? Like, I put effort into it. And, and I put a lot of effort into the first three quarters. And then it got really good.
Okay.
This is just good from the get-go.
Yes.
The pacing is nice. The story's compelling. The little, like, creepy set designs and the little creepy ghosts moving in the night. Like, all of that was fun. And I, as a person who gets scared very easily, didn't enjoy it in a very enjoyable way.
Yeah.
And, like... It was
didn't
fun.
Enjoy it in a very enjoyable way. What does that mean? Well, unpack that sentence.
I'm coming to terms with the fact that despite being scared of those like scary movies very, very easily, enough people have made me watch it. And I've watched enough of scary movies to realize that I might actually kind of like them a little bit. And like... It's a little bit of a good feeling to be scared. When I was a kid, I would not have been able to sleep when I got scared of movies.
Yeah.
Now it doesn't happen anymore, and I think I'm starting to reframe it a little bit. Like, the genre of horror is specifically movies. I don't know. Maybe I'm kind of getting into it. You've done it, Chloe. You made me watch enough scary
stuff.
This was
not intentional because I don't tend to like too much scary. Like, I like it in small doses. Like, I'm not quite, like, averse to it. Like, maybe you were.
I think
like,
they/them really took me
that
over that.
That was the one. Yeah. Kevin Bacon is magic, I'm telling you. Okay. I mean, I think one thing I wanted to pick out here that you mentioned was the setting. And that was mm-hmm. something that I really... enjoyed about, like, they do such a good job of making this like slightly decrepit, sad country manor.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't know, there's something about that kind of setting that is just like intoxicating to me. I don't know, like, I feel like it comes up so much, like the first Knives Out movie, to connect back to a movie mm-hmm.
yesterday with my mom.
Watched it yesterday.
And my friends are watching Glass Onion as we speak right now.
Okay.
On Discord. Everyone's watching
it. What do you think of Knives Out, by the way, the first one?
Completely different vibe.
Yeah.
Really fun.
Yes.
But I think I like Onion more.
Okay.
I don't know, maybe it's because I watched it first and LeBlanc was more tame in it, but...
I think LeBlanc in the first one... This is getting so far afield, but, but whatever. We're digressing. We do this. He's presented as almost an antagonist from about half of it, because the protagonist is trying, which I'm trying not to spoil too much, is trying not to have a secret discovered. And so LeBlanc finding, mm-hmm. not LeBlanc, Benoit Blanc, not LeBlanc. LeBlanc, I think, is the villain from Final Fantasy X-2. Trying to find that out is the main... driver of the narrative. And so, like, he's the bad guy, and he's not a bad guy, but he's like,
he's the hound.
Yes,
on the case.
That is an excellent way to put it.
He's very inconvenient to everyone there.
Yes,
including the main character.
And also, he's a lot more gruff, I think, because he's mm-hmm. He's very suspicious of all of them. He doesn't think any of them are good people. And even the main character, he knows that she's hiding something, and mm-hmm. That's why he's a lot gruffer with her.
Yeah, but we still get, like, moments of levity from him, and the second movie is entirely that, so I think I just like that aspect of him really, really shining through.
Yes. So what I was trying to say is these, like, country manor, like, movies... There's some, like, these decrepit old houses mm-hmm. with secrets, and I just love them so much. It's just something about it is just totally my vibe.
That's fair, yeah.
Okay, you don't agree?
No, I was just thinking, because Hill House has that too, but in Hill House, it's a much scarier house. Whereas here, I'm trying to put my finger, it's kind of lived in here, which makes sense because no one lives in it in Hill House.
Yeah.
But even in the scenes where people were in that house in the first season, I mean, they're different houses, but like when people were in the house in Hill, it still felt very, very cold and antagonistic. Whereas here, this house just feels very lived in.
Yes.
I kind of like that. And I mean, in the end, when, like, the spell breaks, kind of, and we see, yeah. like, all of those ghosts in the house. It was, for some reason, like, just so, it was such a twist of a trope, and it was so kind of, like, not necessarily kind-hearted, but in a way warm. Like, all of these ghosts are stuck in this house because this woman who experienced grief and, like, jealousy and hatred and forgot herself killed all of them, right? So, but mm-hmm. they were there kind of together. And throughout the entire show, none of them bothered anyone, right? Like, until Peter and...
Was it Rebecca?
Is her... yeah.
Yes, the, Rebecca Jessel.
Yeah,
so... au pair who died before Danny arrived.
Yeah, so when Rebecca and Peter become ghosts in this house, I'm trying not to spoil despite this being literally what we're doing.
Just spoil it, dude.
When they die, that's when all of this starts, right? Like, they start interfering with the people living there. But before that, none of the other ghosts did anything. They were just stuck there and kind of hanging out. And in some way, they were playing with the little girl with the dolls, you know? Like, it's just somehow wholesome in the end. I don't know, like, it really gave off a different vibe. I think the lady in the lake
was a little evil.
No, absolutely. Like, that's why I said that she was, you know, full of grief and rage and, like, all of that. And she did kill a lot of people. But as far as ghosts that are not her... Because she's the ghost of the lake or whatever, right? Yeah. The house ghosts are housebroken, kind of.
it's an interesting argument that, like, kind of the polluting force here is not the ghosts. The ghosts are just people who, you know, have lingered, in a sense, after death. The polluting influence here is kind of toxic masculinity. Peter Quint is really the antagonist of it. He totally was. Who's the antagonist if not Peter Quint?
Well, definitely Lady in the Lake, but I don't think Peter is, like, the main one. He's just, like, a very gross and bad person. He's actually my favorite character, too.
Oh, of course. This is why you're defending. Okay, this is why you don't think you... Okay, who is the main antagonist if not Peter Quint?
Well, at first it feels like it's him.
Yeah.
But then, as we learn more about it, he's a victim of the Lady in the Lake. And despite her being somewhat of a victim of her circumstances, she's a full agent of her actions too, you know? It's not like she became a ghost and then, like, over time forgot who she is and only the violence they know. Like, she's also a bad person. And despite, like, her husband betraying her, like, she killed her sister, right?
Yeah.
So, like, she's not a nice person. She is a killer, and she is bad. And, like, just because it's a sad story doesn't mean that it kind of absolves her of that responsibility. So, to me, she is absolutely the evil in this story.
But the evil is not necessarily the antagonist. And I'm going to make that distinction right now, which is that... True. The antagonist is the person who sets kind of the events of the story in motion, in a sense. And Peter Quint really does that. You know, like, if not for Peter Quint,
true.
A lot of the stuff that happened in this story would not have... Like, the lady in the lake is just... She is evil in that sense. And she is the kind of faceless horror that's lurking behind all the actions. Mm-hmm. But Peter is the one who... you know, first of all, he dies because he's stealing from the house. And, you know, while he's out lurking late at night when he shouldn't be, that's when he dies. So it's because of his,
he's like
greed.
Yeah, he's the obstacle for a lot of people. Yeah,
which is the antagonist. Yeah. So I agree with you that the ultimate kind of motivating evil force is the Lady in the Lake. But Peter Quint is the main antagonist of the story. And I agree. I really like him as a character because he's just, I don't know. He's very believably, you know, awful in the way that I don't know. Again, it's he's kind of just like toxic masculinity.
Yeah, he's
defined.
Just like a sleazy guy.
Yeah, like you could totally see him. He's so sleazy. He's so perfect at it, and the way he like seduces Rebecca and gets really jealous of Rebecca, even being friends with Owen, and just like I don't know, just everything that he does is just like very. It's just very perfect. He's a really great character, in the way that you just. Mm-hmm. You just despise him.
Yeah. He's
And the actor, who was it, Oliver Jackson Cohen?
He does a really good job because he plays Luke in the first season and it's a completely different character.
What else has he been? I feel like he's been in other stuff that I've been impressed by. Let me look him up.
I feel like we watched something with him together.
Yeah, I'm trying to find out what, but I don't know what. Because I don't really, I didn't watch Dracula. I didn't see Invisible Man. I don't know. Anyway, but he's great.
Yeah. Maybe I haven't seen stuff with him, but I don't know.
He should
I feel
be in
like
more stuff.
I've seen him. No. Oh, I think, no, I just seen him in LA. That's what it was. That's why he's on my mind as like a person I've seen somewhere else.
You saw him in LA?
Yeah.
When you were visiting, you like saw him?
Yeah.
Where? You gotta give more details than that.
Oh, we just went to tour the Warner Brothers studio and there were like people filming stuff there.
Oh. Yeah. Okay.
But anyway. Yeah.
Anyway.
I don't know, but like, I think they balanced it really well, where he's definitely not a good person, right?
Yeah.
But he is the victim of the lady in the lake.
Yes.
And then with Rebecca, she's definitely not like, she's in the situation in an abusive relationship, right?
Yeah.
But there's something about how she leans into it that also is such like a little gray area. Yeah. Which was very interesting as well. They
she
were
ends up being
love.
Quite heroic, though, in the end.
Yes.
She deceives Peter in the whole, like, possession thing that they've got going in mm-hmm. order to, you know, basically keep him from permanently possessing the children.
Which is actually what I think is also coming from the same exact place as her being slightly, like, very into this relationship and willingly leaning into it. It's like she has a very strong personality. She's a person who does what she wants, and she has a moral compass. That both led her into that relationship because she, like, stepped into it, but it also saved the children because she's like, no, we're not killing children.
Yeah.
Like, it's kind of a character trait that is, it's like the same thing, but it led to two very different places, and I really like when movies and shows do that. It's like you're staying true to the character, but depending on the situation, sometimes you want them to deviate a little bit. And it's frustrating when she does keep going out with Peter. And like, even after she sees that it's a bad relationship, they are in love. But then afterwards, you're like, well, actually, it's okay that she's like that because this is what she's choosing to do with that.
Yeah.
I really enjoyed that. This second season, it's so much more like Haunting of Hill House than Haunting of Hill House was.
What do you mean by that, as someone who has not finished the first season?
The feeling of it is there. I mean, this is based off Turn of the Screw, and it's very closely following that story.
Which I've never read. Have you read it?
Yes. Okay. And a fun fact, it's set up as a group of people on Christmas Eve telling each other scary stories.
There we go. It all circles back.
It all comes a full circle.
Yeah.
But like in the book, there's a certain feeling of dreamlike states and bending reality, right? Like things just seem very off in the book, in Hill House.
Yeah.
But in the first movie, they made it a completely different thing. Like they made the house behave close to how it is in the book, but it was a very, very different feeling. Whereas here, the subtlety is there, the haunting is there, just like people feeling that little things are off.
Yeah.
And I think it's because we're actually in the house in this season, whereas in the first one, a lot of it takes place outside of it, and we occasionally go there, just because of how the framing is set up.
Yeah.
So when I was watching this, that's when I got that hit that I was really missing from the first season.
Okay.
That's when I was like, oh, this is what I wanted to watch. And I think I've seen like a bigger response to it online too, and it has everything to do with Danny and who's the other gay? And Jamie. with Danny and Jamie, because that's a mouthful, because that is the queer relationship that I thought would be in Hill House.
Yeah.
So, yeah, like, I think season two is much more Hill House and Bly Manor stories than the first season is Hill House.
Okay. Interesting. I don't know, again, because I've not read the story or watched that for, I can't really comment on this, but I find that interesting.
Why can't you comment on it?
I will say I have noticed that, like, on the internet, it feels like Bly Manor has, much more positive reputation than Hill House. Like, I feel like, and you see a lot more, I feel like there was just a lot more social media buzz around Bly Manor as well. Like,
it's also gay.
Yeah, I think that makes a big difference. I mean, for
the circles of media that we follow. Yeah.
Yes. But even without that, I don't know. I just feel like I heard more.
Yeah.
There was more buzz.
I think it's a tighter story.
Yeah.
And, like, in the first season, there's the whole thing where they go to the past and the future, and they do the same thing here. But over there, it feels like it's much more detached.
Yeah.
And also, like, a lot of the characters are not likable.
Yeah.
Like, the main guy, the journalist, I did not care for. He was just, like, mean to his siblings. It starts with him publishing a book and all of them being mad at it because, like, he called his parents crazy and he's mad at his father for killing his mom. And, this is all episode one, so it's not spoilers.
Yeah.
But, like, the protagonist of that story is a guy who immediately alienates every single person in his family.
Yeah.
And is, like, faking his entire thing and is not passionate about it. So it's, like, a very specific type of character that I did not care for. Like, I was annoyed when he was on screen until later, like, he got a little bit more interesting. But we start off with this jerk and a family that's experiencing a very big loss, yet he's still being a jerk. And, like, that did not connect the same way that, you know, there's a narrator at a wedding.
It's not as relatable.
It's not as relatable. It's much more
relatable.
It's less confronting and it's less in your face. And I think it's just something we're more familiar with. But also, like, the actor that tells the story, she was in Hill House and she was the mom. So there's, like, mm-hmm. that follow through. A few people here, I think specifically her and the actor who plays Peter, they're the two who are from the first season.
There's several characters who reappear from the first season, right? Was the uncle as well? I don't know.
I haven't watched it. That's right.
I just know that, like, Michael Flanagan likes to use a certain set of actors.
Yeah. I mean, Kate Siegel, who played Theo in the first one, right? She did. Did she? Let me look it up.
Yeah, I have no idea.
Yeah, she played Theo in the first one.
Okay.
And she plays the evil ghost in this one.
Evil ghost.
So she's just cool, you know? But, like, there's that connection, so that's fun to see.
Yeah.
But at the same time, like, it's completely different. The vibes are different. It's cozier. The house is more lived in, and I'm repeating myself, but, like, this is the summary of what is right in this show that I didn't feel that being there in the first one. It's a story that you're a part of, in a way. Like, I was immersed in it. Pardon the pun. Because she drowns people.
Yeah.
I love explaining my jokes. It's your turn to speak.
Okay, yeah. That was definitely a lot.
I'm sleepy.
You're sleepy? It's 11 a.m.
I know, but I went to sleep like 4 a.m. because I'm smart.
Why? What were you doing so late?
I was watching YouTube.
You must have been a darn good YouTube.
No.
Dude. Anyway, I wanted to circle back around and talk about some of the characters that are in this one that, like, I liked and didn't like. Okay, so, because we really haven't talked about the characters all that much. So first off, our main character is Danny, who's the American au pair who's taking care of the children. We learn that she has a very traumatic past. So she was engaged and her fiancé and her had a falling out and when he realized that she did not want to marry him. And he got really angry and quickly exited a car right as a truck was passing by, which hit and killed him. And so, at least for like the first few episodes, she's haunted by the ghost of him.
The gay guilt.
Not literally, but like figuratively speaking, she kind of sees him everywhere. She can't look in mirrors because she sees him. Like, she covers all the mirrors. But part of this that's so interesting is that there is a moment where they have a bonfire, her and all the other staff at the manor. And at first she's not able to let go, but after having a conversation with Jamie, the gardener, who she falls in love with, she is able Jamie's to cool. let go. Because Jamie's hot. Wrong temperature.
Sorry.
And they end up falling in love. And it's a very interesting, I don't know, I find it interesting because it's set in 1987. And yet it feels very natural. And I'm just wondering, I don't know, like part of me is like, I feel like it would be a lot more tentative in 1987. Like,
Jamie doesn't have time for tentative. What are you talking about?
That's fair. Jamie seems very out and proud by comparison to Danny.
She was in juvie, right? Or like jail.
I think so. I think they're definitely
for
like
a while.
She's portrayed as kind of like, oh, she's like cool and maybe bad in some way. And then you learn that, I don't know, she's the gardener. Like, yeah. How bad can she be?
She's very flippant and like cold, but is the yes. warmest person who is the most nurturing. And like, that's catnip. You know what I mean?
Yes.
In shows like these, that's like the character that the protagonist is just like immediately in love with.
Yes. She's definitely the, and she's got this like punk kind of aesthetic,
mm-hmm.
a little bit like, not like
she smokes.
Not like a mohawk, but like definitely got that like 1980s British like, I don't know, quasi punk vibe.
She has the the precursor to a mullet, I would say.
Yes,
and you know how popular mullets are with the gay ladies
for whatever reason. Yes. Not a fan, personally.
I don't see it, but...
You're gonna do what you're gonna do.
I mean, yeah. Every gay woman I've seen with, or like just non-binary person I've seen with the mullet, they make it work, I will say.
Yeah, people, and it's just like, I could never. I could never. Anyway. anyway, so there's some other, like Hannah, I really want... think about who, speaking of making a haircut that I could not make work, Hannah is spectacular and she's, you know, she's bald. Does she have alopecia? I don't remember if that's established.
I don't think so. I don't know.
Or she just rocks the...
I think she just rocks it. She looks great.
Yes.
Like, I was with Owen on this one, like, yeah. Yeah, guy. Have a crush.
Yeah. Yeah. Owen the cook. So we learn... in the end that Hannah is actually a ghost. She got killed by Peter, who is possessing the boy whose name
Miles.
Is Miles.
How do I remember that? Oh my god. I'm changing.
He possessed Miles, pushed Hannah down a well where she died, but again, ghosts can kind of exist freely, and so she's just there. And I feel like her story is by far the most tragic because her whole thing is she wants to go to Paris.
Yeah.
And she just wants to like see the world. But because she's a ghost, she's stuck there.
And she's not like a ghost for long. Didn't she die right before Danny gets there?
I
think it was literally as Danny's driving up, Peter pushes her in the well.
Oh, really?
I think so.
Okay.
Am I misremembering it?
I don't remember if the timeline, how it was established. I might have missed that. It's possible.
Like, she doesn't know and no one figured it out. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
I think it happened just before because that's when Owen is like, oh, is your neck okay? I think he asked her. Because she keeps rubbing the neck, which is where it broke.
I mean, that would make sense timeline-wise because... when, if I remember correctly, when Danny arrives, that Miles is acting really strangely. And I guess that must be wise because Peter just killed Hannah.
Yeah.
Okay, that makes sense. I guess maybe I didn't.
Even if it wasn't the same day, Like, Rebecca died recently.
Yes. Hannah died recently.
And Rebecca and
Peter. And Rebecca. Well, Rebecca, it had been a couple months for Rebecca.
Yeah.
Right?
But you know what I mean? Regardless, she hasn't been stuck there for years, and that's why she can't go to Paris. It's like a very, very viable dream for her, for us, for most of the story. And we find out with her that she can never have that. And it breaks my heart because Owen wants to leave too, but he's tethered by his mother and Hannah.
Yeah. And he is alive, though, just to be clear.
Yes, as he should be.
Yes.
Owen is a good guy.
So he is very much meant to stand in very stark contrast to Peter Quint, whereas Peter Quint, again, is like the toxic masculinity avatar. Owen is the avatar of like good masculinity. And the two are in opposition, which is why Peter gets so jealous of Rebecca being friends with Owen.
And Owen is just like, dude, I'm making pasta. Relax.
Yeah, I mean, and he's the cook, like, which is often, you know, gendered as female, like, mm-hmm. preparing meals, although, I don't know, like,
it's more complicated. I was also going to say that food is a great way to show love for people as well. Yes. So it's like, he's a much softer person.
He is a soft boy, but in a good way. And he just wears the best sweaters.
He does. He just looks cozy. He's a cozy character.
He is what's that Higgy? What's that like Norwegian concept of like winter coziness? That's Owen. Do you know what I'm talking about?
Yeah.
I'm looking it up right now.
He's like a log in a fireplace kind of guy, you know? Whereas Peter Quint is like the pebble you trip over outside and slip on ice and like break your knee.
It's often mispronounced Higgy. It's actually pronounced more like Hygge.
Hygge.
Hygge, Hygge.
What are you talking about? I think I spaced out for a second. And
The Norwegian concept of coziness.
Okay. I know what you're talking about. I don't remember the word. I don't think it's that. I think it's pronounced differently.
No, I'm reading this right here. Often mispronounced Higgy, it's actually more like Hygge.
Ooh, I like that.
Pronounced Hygge.
Cannot take it seriously.
Multiple sites saying this now. So, yeah, I think Higgy is better. If someone said like, oh, you're looking nice in Hygge.
Why, thank you.
Yeah, Hygge. You're looking nice in Hygge.
We're going to start saying that at people. Oh, gosh.
Sexual harassment complaints.
No, you don't understand. That's how you pronounce it.
It's a Norwegian. I am a quarter Norwegian. I can say it.
I'm not. I can't.
Anyway, we haven't talked about the kids much.
They're creepy.
They're so good at being creepy. Even when we know they're not, like, possessed.
They're good actors because you can tell when they're possessed and when they're not because they're creepy.
They're creepy either way, though. Like,
I mean, kids in movies and shows are almost always creepy. I love when movies just write out characters that are children.
Yeah.
It's hard to pull off.
Yeah.
Because they're children.
They are children. They do be children.
So, okay. Turn of the Screw
has
a very interesting thing in it where it's like a narrative within a narrative within a narrative, which a lot of stories from that time period have, like Wuthering Heights, for example. Like, that's a story of a narrative within a narrative within a narrative, right? The guy comes to a mansion, there's a maid that gossips and tells him a story, and in that story we have different narrators. Turn of the Screw has a very similar style to it where it's a narrator at a Christmas Eve party, or a Christmas party, whatever, telling a story of how a governess wrote a letter to him telling of the story that happened to her. And so there's always, like, that thing of what is credible, what is not. She's not a reliable narrator. She's part of the story. She's only telling us her side.
Yeah.
And in Turn of the Screw, in the end, I mean, should I spoil it? It's like a million-year-old story.
Yeah, you can't... it's like spoiling Hamlet and saying Hamlet dies at the end.
Yeah, it's not the most like famous and popular story, but whatever, like get over it.
If you don't want spoilers, return to the screw, skip forward 5 minutes.
Yeah, it's not that shocking. In the end, the governess finds out that Peter Quinn is possessing Miles, and Miles dies.
Yeah.
And we don't know how, she says he just falls over, right? But the only moments of, like, specters and ghosts we get is her seeing it. None of the other characters are seeing them, right? So okay. At that point, we can start to, like, contemplate, like, is she telling the truth? Is she maybe not... Oh, siren.
Fun. Siren.
Siren. And then we can start to, like, contemplate, is she fully mentally there? Is she in the right headspace? Is she seeing these things haunting her? Or is it actually happening? Like, are these just children that she's putting on her moral codes onto that might be a little too strict? Because in the story, she's like, she's completely against anything sexual whatsoever. Okay. Like, that's the big part of the story, is that, like, Miles is exhibiting some parts of, like, possibly hitting puberty. You know, kids are curious. So for her, that is literally the worst thing that a child could possibly have thoughts of. So when I read it, I was like, oh, she's just putting on this thing to justify why this boy is behaving like that. It's obviously because there was, like, a fop rake character on the grounds who seduced the governess, who ended up killing herself. And he's still out there, and he's haunting this boy and corrupting him. And it's, like, unclear if she's the one who kills Miles or not. So there's, like, a lot of that uncertainty and Puritan views, and, like, it's interesting to speculate on what the story is actually about.
Okay.
I mean, I read this in school, so obviously, like, that was a thing. But very few people actually agreed with me on that part. I feel like it's the same split as, like, when we read Hill House in that class, and all the queer people are like, oh yeah, this is gay, and all the not queer people are like, what are you talking about? Like, it was a very similar split, not necessarily between the gays and straights, but, like, I'm really segregating here.
Yeah.
But, like, a few people saw where I was coming from, but a few people were, like, not refusing to believe it, but they've read it differently. And I think this story really plays with that, but in a way that's much more, like, concrete. Here, it's exactly what happens, right?
Yeah, we here know. The ghosts are objective fact.
Yeah, but once again, they kept with that narrative layering, because we have a mysterious narrator at a wedding telling us a story about something that happened to the bride, and she has no memory of it. You know what I mean? Like, there's that unreliable part to it. Then we get into the second layer, which is Danny as, like, the kind of viewing glass for this story. And then we go further into the past to find out what happened in the past. And once again, it's a scary story at a Christmas, at a wedding party. And I really love that, because, like, you can think whatever you want of it. It's all unreliable.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know. I'm just like, I love when movies and books do that. I'm like, oh my God, they're making me question things. They're not committing. I love commitment issues in narration.
I do love a good unreliable narrator.
Yeah.
I guess I can't comment. Again, I haven't read Turn of the Screw, so I'm just kind of listening. But
yeah, I've been going on diatribes and monologues this episode.
It's definitely a Val episode, which is a good thing. We've had Chloe episodes. Okay. I don't know. Any other thoughts?
What did you think?
Go ahead.
No, you ask.
No.
I'll ask you so you can talk. That's right.
I can talk, yes.
What did you think of why we're here? What did you think of the relationship that Danny has with Jamie? Like, what did you think of Danny's kind of descent into madness at the end, and, like, that whole thing?
I mean, it's a little bury your gaze, because it's like, just let them have a happy ending, darn it.
This is the conversation I wanted to have. It just took us an hour to get there.
Just give them a happy ending. I shouldn't slam things while I'm saying stuff, because that's bad for audio recording. Just give them a happy ending. Give them a happy ending. That's all you had to do. You didn't have to give this whole thing where the ghost is still inside her and it's starting to appear and she has to go away and drown herself. No, you don't need to do that. It could just be like, oh, the ghost is inside her, but the ghost is content because now she sees, you know, that, like, she's feeling true love and they're together and, like, that heals the ghost that's still inside Danny. You're like, I feel like that's just a fine an ending. And I don't know why, you know, like, I get that, like, it's horror and so there has to be this kind of, like, the ending has to be bittersweet, even if it's, you know, not. Like, if you're doing a horror thing, there has to be, like, the hint that, like, something nefarious still lurks out there, right? But, like,
yeah.
I don't think that was necessary. I think you could just have, at the end, like, imagine this. Instead of it being, like, well, I'm, you know, like, Jamie being, like, well, I'm sad and alone telling this story at a wedding. What if it had been, like, Danny had shown up and been, like, oh, I'm so sorry I'm late. My flight got delayed. And, like, that's the ending. And, like, the reveal is that Danny was still alive the whole time.
That would have been too campy for me.
I don't care if it's campy. It's better. I just don't want... I want them to be happy.
I actually kind of liked that because it fit with, like, the character that Danny is shown to be. She's very restless.
Yeah.
She's prone to running away, right? She's,
but they stay together for, like, a decade, right?
I don't know.
They're together for several years.
Few years at least, yeah.
Okay, they opened this is a after business five together. After 5 years.
Okay, so half a decade, which is not a small time. But, like, Danny is this person who kind of likes to suffer a little bit. Like, when things get happy, she tends to, like, pull away from that. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Her kind of returning to that in the end, it was satisfying in a different way. I don't enjoy Bury Your Gaze because, obviously, like, I'm tired of it. I'm very, very, very tired of it. But in this one, I was kind of okay with it. Like, it was interesting. It was weird that they resolved the whole Lady of the Lake thing and then she came back. They could have done that better. I agree with you that that was, like, really weird.
Yeah.
But I did like that in the end, Danny found a place she belonged in a weird way. Like, I don't know. It was just, like... It was thematically satisfying, but I also agree with you. I was a little annoyed at that. Like, you resolved it. It could have just ended there.
Yeah.
They ended the first... spoilers. The way they ended the first season, I liked a little more.
Okay.
But overall, Bly Manor is better, I think.
Yeah. I think overall, it's really good. I think there are better ways for it to have ended. It's still very enjoyable.
I think I've just, like, told myself that, not Danny. What's her name? Oh my god, Jamie. That Jamie is just, like, the weird aunt that, like, tells the weirdest stories, like, oh yeah, I was in prison for a little bit, and you're like, what? And then she says nothing more about it, or, like, she just has, like, the best stories, so that's why Flora's like, tell us something.
I do find it an interesting story in that, like, the reveals it's Jamie telling the story. Because I feel like in some ways it does not portray Jamie in the kindest light early on.
I don't know about you, but I hate talking about myself in, like, a good way.
I guess, yes, the self-deprecating element. That's true. I mean, in that way, it's really, like...
I don't, yes, like... That's true. I'm not mean about myself in, like, most situations, but I'm never like, oh yeah, I'm like really, really good at this thing. You want me to tell you about it? Like, no.
Okay, fair.
And also she has to look cool. Like, she has to be like the cool dykey lesbian who won over this, like, pink sweater wearing, like, blonde American nanny. You know what I mean?
Yeah. Although she's not all that visibly dykey in the...
She sits weird.
In the older, like, the older Jamie.
Yeah, she's very, like, feminine, which...
Yes.
Like, because of the actor who plays her, I'm fine with.
Yeah.
Because, like, she needs her vibe, and it's great, but... And I think they also try to throw us off the, like, the scent that it was her, but, yeah, she would not have changed it to, like, to that style, I don't think.
Right. I don't know. There's something interesting about that, but, yeah, okay. We've been talking for about an hour, so any final thoughts on this?
Peter is the best character. The children are creepy, and I love the little ghosts in the house. They're great. They're a little family.
I mean, it is like, if not for, you know, the Lady in the Lake and Peter Quint, I feel like these ghosts are not unhappy. Like, these,
they're just chilling. They're stuck there and they all got murdered, but they're like having a funky fresh time playing in like a dollhouse.
Yeah, just hanging out.
How about you, Chloe? What are your final thoughts?
I mean, I enjoyed it a lot. I don't know what drew me to it originally. I think it was just literally like, it was like, it popped up on Netflix. It's like, this is new. I was like,
it was also everywhere kind of for a little bit.
Yeah, but I didn't check it out because of social media. I checked it out because I think it showed up on Netflix. I don't know. Got hooked. I really enjoyed it. I think it's a fun watch. I think it presents a really compelling story in that, like, it's, I think it does the horror right in that the horror is lurking a lot and there's a mystery to be solved.
It's not exponential. What's the opposite? Like, the square root of it gets, I don't know, math. It's like a mystery within a mystery within a mystery.
It's recursive.
Thank you.
Yes. I was like, what? Thank you all so much for tuning in. I just want to mention our social media. Our Twitter, Instagram, and Pinterest is @InMediaLez. Our subreddit is r/InMediaLez. Our website is InMediaLez.com. We now have a Tumblr, and it is...
ThePodInMediaLez.tumblr.com.
And you can email us at InMediaLez@gmail.com. Thank you to everyone who rates, likes, subscribes, comments, whatever you do. We love you.
And we'll see you in the next one.
God bless.
I almost forgot to say it again.